Yes, I'll promise no beetles in this presentation. There'll be no life cycles, and there'll be no applications of any chemicals whatsoever. There's not even a picture of grass in this presentation, so it's going to be a little bit different. What there will be are a lot of ideas surrounding some things that have been said earlier today. So there's been a lot of talk about distribution. There's been a lot of talk of where species are being found. And really, that's my question. I'm really interested in the distribution of species, whether that is at broad-scale distributions or whether that's at a really fine-scale distribution located through a playing field. And we will see a lot of maps like this, so they're pretty cute. So this question actually goes back, and I have to thank Ben for actually bringing this up, because this question goes back to something I think you told me or asked me a while ago. A few years ago, I did a project with invasive crane flies, trying to figure out where they'll be found in North America. They're invasive species from Europe, and they're brought in. So a project I work on was looking to see if the native range distribution could predict the invasive range distribution in North America. And for both Tipula oleracea and Tipula pallidosa, we found that we really could not predict North American distributions by the native range. As you can see from this image, where this is for Tipula oleracea, you can see these blue dots up here. That's where it's actually found. Anywhere there's a blue or red, that's where the model would predict these to be found. So right away you should be able to say, wow, that's a lot of area where they're not found, where it predicts them to be found. So the question that came up from this were really two questions. One, will these species actually fill this entire range? Is that actually going to be possible? And then more so the purpose of this talk is to go the next step and really think about if there is climate change occurring and temperatures are changing and precipitations are changing, patterns are changing, what will that actually do to this distributional pattern? So that's the purpose of the talk today, is trying to talk a little bit about species distributions and specifically turf grass pest distributions and trying to figure out where these distributions will go and how they'll change over time. So here's my obligatory change in temperature slide. So what we've actually found is changing in temperatures, and this is over a 100-year pattern. And what you can see is since about 1980, temperature anomalies are consistently showing warmer temperatures around the globe. So that's kind of a given. We know temperatures are increasing. But it's not only temperatures that are increasing, but it's also precipitation patterns that are changing in different locations. So we really should expect there should be major changes in temperature schemes, precipitation patterns, and that will likely highly affect different pest distributions and where they're going to be found. And not only where they're going to be found, but the densities that they are found at in those geographic locations. So we can really think about the ways that climate change will affect pest distributions. And so we can look at physiological effects. So we know that there's going to be things such as more rapid development with increasing temperatures. We'll know there'll likely be more generations per year in some geographic locations. We know life cycle events such as eclosion or whether pupation or emergence, these life cycle events will change over time. And so to an extent, some of this will even affect ideas such as half gold, half green, and when emergence patterns are occurring for things like annual bluegrass weevil, I'll just say it since everyone else has. Then we should also expect earlier spring emergence, later fall activity. So these have all been documented over a wide range of pests. And so it's kind of shown that this has been happening. What I'm really interested in is distributional patterns, and so I want to know change in distributions. So what we should expect to see and what we actually are currently seeing is that for a wide range of pests, we're seeing increase in elevation. So things are moving up in elevation where typically they may have been cold limited. We're also seeing poleward migration. And so this figure that's on here actually shows with latitude over the y-axis and year across the x. This is for a broad range of pest species, and it's really looking at when is the first detection of the pest and when it emerged. So this is a long-range study over many, many different types of pests, and really what you can see with this line going up is that the earliest emergence of a broad range of pest species is found farther from the equator every year. And so over time, we're finding a poleward migration in many distribution patterns of species. And the last part of that is we should just expect range changes for species to occur. We should expect generally things to move north and maybe moving farther away from the equator. And because I can talk about other things except just crane fly, I decided to throw in some other sorts of organisms. So today we're going to talk about two species of invasive crane fly, Tipula oleracea, Tipula pallidosa, and two species of invasive mole crickets. And I'll talk about hopefully by the end I'll remember to talk about this, but why I'm talking about invasive species and why I'm not talking as much about native species. There's actually a pretty good reason for that. So what you can see, these are color-coded throughout the dots. So anytime you see a blue dot, or sorry, green up here, this is Tipula pallidosa, blue Tipula oleracea. Red is going to be the tawny mole cricket, and yellow is going to be the southern mole cricket. It's shifted. The main thing that I'm going to do today is I'm going to talk about distribution modeling using a program called MaxEnt. And basically that takes into account anytime you have a known occurrence of an organism, the fact that it's known to occur there tells you something about its ecological preferences and physiological tolerances. So if it survives in a location long enough for me to find it, it can survive in that range of conditions. So the idea behind this is to use the actual known occurrences of all these species, build a model based on climate data, then project that model to a different set of conditions to see where things will be found. So for all four of these species, I use both invasive range in North America and native range points in Europe for the Tipula species and then the mole cricket species in South America. So actually these are pretty well known where they've been distributed both in their native range and their invasive range. So then I use this WorldClim data set that is average temperature and precipitation patterns from 1950 to 2000 as the baseline data set. I projected the models built on this baseline data set to models that would predict the climate in 2050. And just because I wanted to sort of check out the variation that exists, I predicted this to four different climate layers, or four different ideas of changing climate patterns. And there was two representative concentration pathways. And what these are is basically talking about how carbon dioxide is in the environment. So I used an RC 4.5 and an RC 6.0. And these are just basically two of four relative concentration pathways that show how carbon dioxide is going to be released in the environment and when it's going to stop being released in the environment. The relative concentration 45 says that we should peak out at carbon dioxide emissions at about 2040. The RCP 6.0 says it's about 2080. Generally, what I'm going to talk about today is predicted distributions of these pests in 2050. And at that point, we'd expect about a 1.4 degrees Celsius increase in temperature for the RCP 4.5 and about a 1.3 degrees Celsius increase in temperature for the 6.0. And as you can see from these graphs, this is, it's not the most extreme and it's not the most unchanging. It's kind of the middle. So I'm just kind of give a general idea of how things might change, and maybe a more realistic idea. Okay, so this is what we end up. I showed this sort of map before, and so it shows a color ramping from blue to red, and this shows increasing ecological suitability of the species. So this particular map is for Tipula pallidosa, and as you can see, anywhere there's a white coloration, you should not expect that species to exist in that location. Everywhere you see a blue going to red, you should say it could possibly exist in these conditions. And I should say that every one of the models I show is statistically sound and it shows a pretty good prediction. Although all models are wrong, these are just models that can be useful. So what's the blue to red ecological suitability? Why this is important? Well, let me say first that if you have that edge of the boundary, that can show you where it is and is not going to be. But where the blue to red is important is it's showing how suitable the habitat is. So this shows a little bit of work that I did on a local scale. So I went out to a playing golf course and sampled over 2 years. Actually got larval density of Tipula pallidosa at exact locations. Then I built models to predict what the ecological suitability was that playing surface. And this is sort of the relationship that comes out of it. And so we find a significant relationship between increased ecological suitability and an increased abundance of the species. But you might notice that there's a sort of wedginess to this that isn't a great correlation. Basically what it says is high ecological suitability predicts the potential for increased abundance. It isn't a predictor of abundance, it's a predictor of it could be higher at that location. Another little model trick. But it's a pretty good relationship for ecological suitability. This is actually a study that I'm working on now that's looking at Rhamnus cathartica, common buckthorn, and we looked at the prediction of where buckthorn should be found against the total cover of independent samples. So we found the same sort of idea going there. So through these maps, if you see something red, good ecological suitability, blue, not so good, but good enough. Okay, so these are the models that you can see for the four species that I put up here. And the one thing you can take away from all these models is at least three of the species, we got the two tipless species and the tawny mole cricket, are all strongly showing a non-equilibrium distribution. So what non-equilibrium distribution actually means is it's not filling its range. It's got lots of area where it probably could occur, it's just not occurring there yet. And this could be for a variety of reasons. For the tipulus species, they've both been present on the East Coast for, well, at least Palidosa has been there for about 100 years, and it hasn't made it very far. And so they're just very slow dispersing species. I'm not as big on mole crickets, but I know they aren't as fast as dispersing either. But it does look as if the southern mole cricket is more so filling in the range down here. So every time you see a yellow to red, you see an occurrence point. So it seems to be filling in the range pretty well. So again, this is current. This is the current ideas. And so the idea would be, in the future, will these things keep going, and will they fill these areas of suitability, or will those areas of suitability actually crunch down and decrease or change in any way? So I'll show you the one for the tawny mole cricket and give you an idea what the differences are. So this is the current distribution, and then the RCP 4.5 and 6.0. Superficially, they look pretty identical. There's not a whole lot going on. But if you really look at somewhere like Indiana and Ohio, so in the current conditions, they would predict not really going to be present there. But if we come down here, our two different concentration pathways, the state goes from not being suitable to completely suitable. So there should be some major changes on the edges of the ranges for these species. The other part, if you look at Kentucky and Tennessee, they go from a pretty dark blue coloration, so pretty low suitability. And you can look at both these concentration pathways, we get more of an orange-red. So they're increasing highly in suitability for these species. So we really should see some change. And so when we look at each of these species separately, what I've done here is actually subtracted the current from the RCP 4.5 to give you a change. So over here, if you see this dark blue, it's getting worse. You see red, it's getting better. So we can see a pretty strong pattern in both tipula species. Southern parts of their ranges should be really contracting, and they should be expanding north in distribution. But you can also see within these distributional patterns, there's areas that are changing more strongly than other areas are changing. So we should see major changes in distribution, and within those distributional ranges, we should see changes in suitability of the environment. So the tawny mole cricket is a little bit crazy because it's showing a pretty strong distributional change to the north. Extremely bright red up here at the top. So it's going to strongly move to the north over where it is currently. The southern mole cricket, again, it excuse me, isn't really changing all that much. Okay, so that's just an interesting idea. We should expect these patterns, and these patterns are not crazy. These are ones that have been predicted and shown for other pests. Things are going to change greatly. Oh, I should probably show one thing that's fairly interesting. If we go back to the Tipula oleracea, go over here. I know, Ben, you recently found it in Salt Lake City. Is that where it was, in that area?
Yep, I didn't find it.
Well, someone found it. In my original models, that showed this area to be not very good, to the point where it probably shouldn't have existed there. But as you can see this increasing pink coloration through the mountain states, we should expect that there should be expanded distribution for the species quite a bit there. So the West is a much more mix about what's going to happen. East Coast is pretty simple. Things are going to move north. So why did I use invasive species? Well, they're published where they're found. Native species, I think we all know where things are found. But for someone who wants to get an actual point location for any given species, it's really hard to do. So I would, if you find a new species, you publish on it. You say, hey, I found this over here. But if you have a native species that you're treating somewhere, usually you don't publish on that. So usually you need at least 30 points of location to make a good model. Probably want more like 120. I don't have very many. So I've got a good idea where invasive species are going. Native species, I think it's a pretty good question. But for right now, the occurrences just aren't there in the literature to support making the models. There's some interesting ideas you can think about these changes in distributional patterns. The one that I thought was pretty interesting is that biotic interactions are probably going to change over time. And so something like there's a Japanese beetle, green June beetle interaction that goes on in vineyard situations that facilitates damage. green June beetle isn't very far north right now, but we should predict it probably will go farther north, and that will facilitate future damage. And then finally, how is this going to impact biological control agents? I'm currently looking at a Laura bicolor that's a wasp predator or parasitoid of mole crickets to see if it will match up in the future. But the idea of the prey or the pests are changing, will their biological control agents also change? Will be an interesting question. And with that, take any questions anyone might have. Yeah?
So you said that your model will show that certain areas will increase in suitability for these insects, but does that necessarily mean that they will move, that they will migrate to those areas?
No. I mean, it holds a better potential. So again, it's just about, we can't predict for sure where anything's going to go, but we can say if the conditions are more suitable to the species, if it can get there, it'll probably survive and do pretty well. Yeah?
A comment, especially with mole crickets, you know, most of the places where you see them, like in North Alabama, for example, are places where it, even though it may show up as suitable, mm-hmm. it's a place where we have modified locally the soil profile to be suitable for
yeah.
golf courses. You're not going to find mole crickets if you go out into the other places in those heavier clay soils. You're only going to find them. Is that compensated at all?
Not at all.
Okay.
So these are the maps, the final maps of the species. It's a climate map. It's a range map. This is the potential. So if you go through any textbook for turf grass, you see the outline, sort of line drawn around it. It's the same idea, but it's a little bit more informed of an outline of a range. So within this range, yes, definitely there will be smaller areas where it's going to be found and several areas where it won't be found. I actually did include soil types in here, but it was at about a 5 kilometer by 5 kilometer cell size, and so it's still not highly informative. It actually wasn't important. Climate was the overriding factor.
Yeah. Our bicolor
is a good model for you to use because we've
got better distribution.
Yeah, quite a few. Was it just soil type that you used, like forced soil type? It was for Soil Grids 1K, so they have the world gridded off in soil type. And so I used bulk density, I used sand composition, clay composition, nothing came out. It was always going to be something temperature related, something precipitation related. But I do think locally, yeah, that's going to determine where things go. Thank you very much.